Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Rarely has there been a vote in Congress so closely watched by talk show hosts. On Thursday, the House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly 305 to 115 to block the revival of the Fairness Doctrine, a set of rules that used to require public affairs programming and opposing points of view on radio and television. The Reagan administration abolished the Fairness Doctrine in 1987. Now, that was just 1 year before Rush Limbaugh launched his national hit show with 3 hours of one point of view, giving birth to the modern era of conservative opinion as a full-time radio format. Coincidence? Maybe, maybe not. Well, a statement aired on this program last week may have contributed to the sudden vote on the House bill on Thursday. Here's what Senator John Kerry told me that got a lot of coverage nationwide.
No, I think the Fairness Doctrine ought to be there, and I also think the Equal Time Doctrine ought to come back. I mean, these are the people who wiped out one of the most profound changes in the balance of the media is when the conservatives got rid of the Equal Time requirements. And the result is that they've been able to squeeze down and squeeze out opinion of opposing views. And I think it's been a very important transition in the imbalance of our public dialogues.
John Kerry, and there were others last week, including Senator Dianne Feinstein last weekend. We'll hear from her later, threatening to bring back the Fairness Doctrine, largely because of what she saw as conservative talk radio's oversized role in killing the immigration bill, which polls showed the majority of Americans supported. Now, despite Thursday's vote, debate on the Fairness Doctrine is not going away, nor are the underlying issues. Should government regulate the media's political content ever? Are the airways really owned by the public? And is this all beside the point in the cable, satellite, and internet era? We will do what we do anyway and get two points of view about the airing of one point of view. With me are Steve Rendell, Director of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, or FAIR, a liberal media watchdog group, and Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff, a longtime opponent of the Fairness Doctrine. Welcome back to both of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks, Brian.
Nat, take us back to the origins of the Fairness Doctrine, first imposed by the government in 1949, because I think a lot of our listeners are actually hearing this debate about bringing back the Fairness Doctrine, and it's the first time they're ever hearing of the thing. So this was just as television was being born as a mass medium, 1949. What was the context then, and what was the Truman administration trying to accomplish?
Well, it was more than that. It started with a Supreme Court decision in 1969, the Red Lion case, in which, writing for the majority, the court said that because, and it was then called the scarcity doctrine, because there were relatively few radio stations and other avenues around the country for discourse, one had to have fairness. And the FCC accordingly required, and this lasted from 1949 to 1987, that in broadcasting, and that was mostly radio at the time, there each station had to devote a reasonable amount of time, according to the FCC, to the discussion of controversial issues of public importance, all of this to be defined by people in Washington, and also afford reasonable opportunity for opposing viewpoints to be heard. Now, I was in the direct line of the Fairness Doctrine. In the 40s and early 50s, I was full-time in radio at WMEX in Boston doing news, sports. I had my own jazz show and folk music show. And I generated, as did some of the other people on the station, some controversy when I spoke to the political people. And I had Pete Seeger as a guest on my folk music show after he had been blacklisted from all the networks. And by the way, I did not invite on the same program a member of the House Un-American Activities Committee. Hmm. What happened after, there were a lot of letters from the FCC, the boss got very agitated. He had to call in the lawyers. They listened to tapes of the broadcast. And finally, he gathered us all together and said, from now on, there will be no more controversy on this station. He said, you got to cover the news, but that's it. And this happened gradually in a lot of other stations around the country. And meanwhile, what I haven't seen covered in much of the the stories now, the various presidential administrations came in. Fred Friendly, for example, who's my mentor, was my mentor in a lot of these things.
The producer of Murrow at CBS?
Yeah, he was Edward R. Murrow's producer and later became head of CBS News and walked out when they wouldn't have a Senator Fulbright hearing on the Vietnam War and put on a rerun of I Love Lucy. Anyway, Fred said that he was told by Jack Kennedy's Assistant Secretary of Commerce, we use the Fairness Doctrine to challenge and harass right-wing broadcasters because if the FCC decided you weren't fair, you'd lose your license. Richard Nixon did the same thing, maybe 20 times using the Fairness Doctrine that way.
So let me jump in. Steve Rendell, this is one of the major arguments that we hear against the Fairness Doctrine, that it actually results in less discussion of the important issues of the day because many station managers will do what Nat's old station manager did and say, we will have no more controversy on this station if it's going to result in all this trouble.
Let me just say this, that as we get further and further from the time that the Fairness Doctrine was in place, the horror stories seem to get more plentiful and more clear. While the Fairness Doctrine was in place, you did not, I've interviewed countless numbers of people who were in broadcasting then. Many of the people, especially those that were journalists, said they were just asking us to do journalism. They were asking us to, one, and let me speak to something Nat said. I would say that the program director at the station in Boston where he worked was violating the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine has two parts. The first part says that you must cover controversial issues, and the second part says with conflicting points of view on those issues. So by avoiding controversial issues, he was actually violating the Fairness Doctrine.
So do you, think that we have less or more discussion of public issues?
We have far less since it has been dropped. The Benton Foundation, the Pew Group have done studies showing that there is much less political discussion, much less debate of political issues, especially in local television. You have almost no. In places like Los Angeles, you have, if you want political coverage, it's almost non-existent of ballot issues and of candidates. You actually have the number of minutes dedicated to advertising by those campaigns dwarfing the number of minutes that are spent in actual debate. But let me get back to the key issue here. The idea that broadcasting is just like publishing, the New York Times, or just like the Internet, is just wrong. In fact, the Fairness Doctrine traces its origins back to 1927, when the Federal Radio Commission in the 1927 Radio Act said that broadcasting must serve the public convenience, interest, or necessity, and that in 1928 it said that broadcasters must show due regard for the opinions of others. Now, why is it that the government can say to broadcasters that you must do certain things, you must fulfill certain interests, certain public interest?
I'd like to get in on this.
You'll get in on this in a minute. Let him finish his thought.
Yeah. Well, the reason is because the public owns the airwaves, thing. The public owns the airwaves. The public owns the airwaves. They don't, not the broadcasters, as the Red Lion decision found in 1969, they said it is the right of the viewers and listeners, not the right of the broadcasters, which is paramount.
Let me jump in and first invite our listeners to call with questions or comments about the Fairness Doctrine, 212-433-WNYC. You can also go to our comments page that we set up for this at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or call 212-433-9692 for Steve Rendell from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff as we debate the Fairness Doctrine.
I
want to say something about the key
issue.
Guys, I'm running this. I'm going to throw this to Nat right now on the specific point that Steve just made that you laughed at, which is that there's a distinction between owning the wires and the hunks of metal that make up a radio and television station and owning the airwaves, which belong to the public. Do you scoff at that?
Yes, I do, because the public airwaves are owned by the public, but try to buy a radio station. No, the key issue here,
That's my point. From the very beginning,
the key issue is, do we want government to give us fair and balanced radio, television, et cetera, pardon me, and eventually some of the people who are legislating on the fourth return of the Fairness Doctrine want to go on to cable and the Internet. The question is, whether it's print or broadcast or any form of media, how does the government interfere with what is the core, the very core of the First Amendment? Ask James Madison. He made this very clear. The core of the First Amendment is political speech, political advocacy, and other things as well. So you're going to have the FCC, which is now issuing enormous fines on radio stations for so-called obscenity, going back again. And by the way, in terms of what was said before, in 1984, the Supreme Court in FCC versus League of Women Voters, this counters something that was said before, they pointed out that not only was there no more scarcity, but there was, as the FCC 3 years later said, all kinds of radio stations were diminishing the amount of controversy. He talks about journalists. I was a journalist. I was writing at the time as well as broadcasting.
All right,
let me
get Steve's reaction to that.
Well, let me get back to the point that I was trying to make before, and that is, look, the First Amendment cannot fully apply to broadcast because of technical limitations. If not being able to broadcast my opinions, let's put it this way: 99.999% of Americans are having their free speech rights violated because they, according to Nat's logic, because they don't have access to a broadcast license and audiences that they can speak to.
People don't have automatic access
to
express themselves in a newspaper or a magazine either, right?
Well, no, but they can start one. They can start one. And that's the notion, Nat, hang on, wait a second. I don't care what the Supreme Court said. The notion, the broadcast airwaves are still the dominant. They may be diminishing, but they're still the dominant media that we discuss politics on in this country. Much more. People talk about how huge Bill O'Reilly is. On a good night, he gets over 2 million viewers. If any of the nightly news shows ever got that few viewers, the staff would be fired. They generally run between 8 and 10 million viewers a night. So it's still dominant, and those licenses are still scarce.
So Nat Hetoff, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If the marketplace is not serving the function of getting different points of view on the airwaves.
Wait, what is the marketplace if not the people deciding what they want to hear? But look, this goes back to, let me quote the most passionate defender of the First Amendment who was ever on the Supreme Court, William O. Douglas. He was one of the most vigorous dissenters against any attempt to put the Fairness Doctrine into position. And he pointed out that, and he used this analogy, he says, if you have government decide what we read, what we listen to, it's like putting the nose of the camel into the tent.
Yeah, but you hear,
pointed out one last thing. It is anathema to the First Amendment to allow government any role of censorship, yes, over newspapers, magazines, books, arts, TV, radio,
so,
or any other aspect of the press.
So that
it
works perfect.
Censorship.
Right. So that works perfectly in theory. But Steve's point is that in the real world, what the government in this case is trying to do is actually enhance free speech by making sure that more points of view, that making sure that more individuals have access, rather than squelch points of view, which is not the point of the Fairness Doctrine.
Oh, come on. Look at all the people who are trying to bring back the Fairness Doctrine. They're all opponents of Sean Hannity, who once, by the way, called me a hack journalist, Bill O'Reilly, et cetera.
That was on a day when you disagreed with
him. All of the people in Congress, including Mr. Kerry, who are trying to legislate this are liberal Democrats. If it happened again, you'd have the same thing coming from the right wing. If we had Air America finally getting a large enough audience, you'd get this same thing again. It comes right back to the First Amendment.
Whoever's ox is being gored.
That's right.
Nat would have you believe that we at some point had a full menu of politics in our broadcast media, and that people just chose, and that we ended up with conservative talk radio simply because that's what people preferred. Actually, talk radio was born in the backlash years in the shadow of McCarthyism in the early 60s, and it's been conservative ever since. It began with a bunch of white guys railing against the women's movement, the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War protesters, and it's been ever since thus. Now, I would point out to my liberal allies who are for the Fairness Doctrine that the Fairness Doctrine was never applied to a single case of talk radio. There was never a single case in which the Fairness Doctrine dealt with talk radio.
True.
So I do not.
That is not true. There
that is true. I've documented it, Nat.
It's run by very conservative preachers who were knocked off the air, and that was talk radio then. What I was doing was talk radio.
Right. Preachers were knocked off the air in under the Fairness Doctrine. Only one station ever lost its license.
We have to take a break, and that was for
misrepresenting their record, not for imbalance.
We have to take a break. When we continue, I'm going to replay a caller from last week on this who says the talk TV show that he produced, Dick Cavett, was affected by the Fairness Doctrine. We have other callers who used to work in the business or do, and a lot more to go on this debate over the Fairness Doctrine with Steve Rendell from FAIR and Nat Hentoff from The Village Voice. Stay with us.
Well, I'm looking at it, as a matter of fact, Chris, because I think there ought to be an opportunity to present the other side. And unfortunately, talk radio is overwhelmingly one way.
That's Senator Dianne Feinstein on television last week, reacting to the role of talk radio in killing the immigration bill and saying, yeah, she's thinking about bringing back the Fairness Doctrine, which used to be in place, requiring broadcast stations to air a certain amount of public affairs programming and to have opposing points of view on them. We talked about this, as some of you remember, in a call-in last week on the show, and I want to replay a Fairness Doctrine-era story that we got from a caller named Tom, who said he was a producer of the old Dick Cavett show during the Vietnam War.
I remember having had Senator Fulbright on one evening, who was extraordinarily articulate and went on longer than we expected, and the network insisted that I put immediately on a spokesman the next show to counteract him. It was a senator from Wyoming. I forget who he was, but anyway, he was not very. The government put him on. I mean, Johnson administration assigned him. We gave him exactly the same amount of time. He was not nearly as effective a speaker, and so we were then blamed. Just as today, we were blamed for being biased towards the anti-war because the effectiveness. We were kind of blamed of having put on a lame person, which was actually the administration. So, there were still problems in terms of the perception of our show as being, say, left wing.
All right, so there's a Dick Cavett Fairness Doctrine story that also involves Proxmire, who Nat Hentoff was talking about earlier, from a caller last week. I want to play a couple of more clips. Of course, we live in a roughly 50-50 country politically based on the last few presidential and congressional elections. And yet, as has come up in this discussion, conservatives overwhelmingly dominate at least the area of the media known as talk radio. Why is that? Well, here are conservative talk show host Mike Gallagher and Air America owner Mark Green going round on that question on Fox News Sunday yesterday.
But the reality is the audience does dictate the content. That's why you guys went bankrupt or headed into bankruptcy court the first time. People don't want to listen to liberals on the radio.
Here's the goal. Stricter media ownership rules so one station can't control half the market. It's called antitrust, Mike, which is a century old, and conservatives and liberals support it.
We're debating the Fairness Doctrine with Steve Rendell, Senior Analyst for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a liberal media watchdog group, and Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff. Steve, what's your take on what Gallagher and Green were debating there? Why do you think if we live in roughly a 50-50 country politically that talk show the radio talk show world is so dominated by conservative hosts?
Well, I think I touched on it earlier, Brian. Radio talk show as a money-making popular format began about 1960. There were two stations, one in St. Louis and one in Los Angeles, that turned to talk radio. And this was still in the shadow of McCarthyism. The blacklist wouldn't be struck down in a landmark case until, I believe, 1963. And so you had talk radio sort of born in this backlash environment, this still in the shadow of McCarthyism, and it grew up that way. But you also have the abiding preference of corporate media owners for corporate-friendly content. I think it was expressed very well in 2004 when Sumner Redstone, the head of Viacom, which owns a lot of media properties, including CBS, said, you know, John Kerry's an honorable guy. He's really a good guy. I can't say anything bad about him, but Republicans are just better for our business. And so he was explaining why he was supporting Bush.
Nat Hentoff, do you have a different take on why it comes out the way it does?
You know, I'll tell you one thing, and then I'll answer your question. You had a wonderful clip, just two brief clip from Mia Farrow, who's done an extraordinary job in calling attention sustainedly to the genocide in Darfur. If you decided to have Mia Farrow on for an hour, just Mia Farrow, you would then, if the Fairness Doctrine comes back, have had to have either General Omar al-Bashir, the head of Sudan, or one of his minions.
I'll take
this
them.
Again comes back to... Are you
Wait a minute, why wouldn't we want to...
Political appointees at the FCC deciding what is fair and balanced. This is ridiculous. In a free country, you've got to have free speech.
Okay, but
you've got to have no government censorship.
Okay, we get that point. But what about the skewed nature, and we could put this into, you know, the larger context of how you each think the whole media comes out, but at least in talk radio, which is the opinion center of broadcast media, in a 50-50 country, you have kind of a 90-10 split. Why, Nat, do you think that
because
is the
case?
Because
I don't think they've had enough people who are liberals who know how to do radio. Mario Cuomo, who is a very bright guy, I covered him for years. He had a talk show, one of the most thoughtful ones I've ever heard. He didn't know how to use the microphone. If somebody would put me in charge of a radio station, I would get you talk shows that would have audiences.
Let's take a call. Liz in Manhattan, a former CBS News producer, is that right?
Yes, correct, Neil.
Neil's not here. I'll have to do.
Brian, it's Liz Dribben. I have great respect for Mr. Hentoff, whom I've interviewed through the years, and Mr. Rendell, whom I'm listening to. And gentlemen, and if I may say gentlemen, we've got to remember, this is not a question of forcing it. In the 1960s, when I was starting out in Buffalo on the big rock station, WKBW, and we did a weekly public affairs program. It wasn't as if somebody said, you've got to do this point of view and that point of view. We had to do programs that allowed for public service, and we did them, and we won awards and all of that stuff. But the important thing was we did them because we didn't want to lose our license. And what happens now is licenses are out there in the hands of a few, and it's become outrageous for somebody to own 1,200 stations. And please, with all due respect, I do believe if you check your record books, gentlemen, you will notice that it began with Mr. Carter in the presidency. It didn't begin with Mr. Reagan.
The dismantling of the Fairness
Doctrine? The dismantling started with Mr. Carter, whom I believe, and I'm not as swift on dates and laws, et cetera, as Mr. Rendell and Mr. Hentoff. But I believe if you look it up, and I probably should.
But it was just an FCC decision, right, under the Reagan administration
that
ended the Fairness Doctrine.
Yes, they stopped. They actually stopped.
Jr.
They actually stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine
under Carter.
Years before.
I see.
Before they took it off,
before they took it off the books.
Yeah, could I point?
Well, wait. Her question was to Nat. And Nat, what about the consolidation of media ownership in relatively few hands? Does this not concern you?
Of course it concerns me, but the caller said, indeed, licenses are in the hands of a few. Who gives the licenses? In the hands of the FCC, which depends for what it decides, if this comes back again, on what the administration is going to be, whether it's going to be Democrats or Republicans who control it. And again, this is not just an idle warning. If this comes back again in view of what the media has become as it enlarges, believe me, it will reach cable, because Congress can change that, put the FCC in charge of that, and a lot of people want to change the Internet to make it fairer and more organized. Once you start monkeying around with the First Amendment and letting the government decide what's fair and balanced, you know what you're going to get. It ain't going to be fair, and it ain't going to be balanced.
Brenda in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Brenda.
Hi. I'm an avid Rush Limbaugh listener. I think he's funny, and he's an entertainer. But he actually is a little bit fairer than maybe some of your listeners are aware of, because he actually has to read an article, say, in the New York Times before he can respond to it, or he has to put on a quote of Dianne Feinstein before he can respond to it. So I get to hear both sides in his way, which I find very interesting. And so that's all I wanted to say, and I hope your listeners may tune him in occasionally. He comes in on at 12 o'clock.
Brenda, thank you very much from the Rush Limbaugh press office by giving out the time of his broadcast. But seriously, Steve, what about that?
Well, I'm actually co-authored a book on Rush Limbaugh called The Way Things Aren't, Rush Limbaugh's Reign of Error, that pointed out that he takes very few calls to begin with. He does occasionally take a call opposing him, but many people have pointed to talk radio's habit of taking callers who disagree with hosts as something that is automatically fulfills the Fairness Doctrine. And I think Liz, the caller before, and Mark Green make great points. If we had true antitrust laws enforced in this country, and you could break up some of these giant conglomerates that own, say, for instance, with Clear Channel, 1,200 radio stations, and have more diverse ownership, we'd have more diversity of opinion. What we have now, leading into the Iraq War, were 70% pro-war voices on national nightly network news shows versus 3% against the war. There are gross imbalances here, and no matter how much Nat yells and implies that the Fairness Doctrine was some sort of fascistic or Stalinist regime, it's just wrong. The Fairness Doctrine, the FCC did not go to stations. It completely depended on listeners and viewers noticing that maybe a point of view that they thought should be in a story, contacting the stations. Generally, it was resolved at that level, where the station would say, oh, we see your point. We'll give you 5 minutes at midnight tonight. There was no equal time involved in Fairness Doctrine, by the way. That's a completely different doctrine that I think Senator Kerry confused a little bit.
When he talked
at least
about,
that quote did.
He talked about bringing back the equal time doctrine as well as the Fairness
but
Doctrine.
Only if the station disagreed with the listener did it go to the FCC, and sometimes the FCC sided with the station and sometimes with the listener, and then they would but you know, Nat, you laugh, but you can't explain to me how the government telling you that you have to add voices to a discussion and that you must do controversial broadcasting is some kind of wild violation of the First Amendment, but that the government doling out the stations, or the government telling stations that they must do children's programming or news programming or educational programming is not. I mean,
right. Nat, is there no distinction there between government decisions that are in good faith to try to, you know, enhance dialogue, enhance quality, whatever, and those that are censorious for the government's interest?
Look, I agree with Steve on one count. I have no objection, quite the opposite, to doing something about the antitrust laws. Of course, there's a certain amount of illusion there. When you get true diversity of ownership, are you really going to get diversity of content? But the main thing is, and he's dead wrong, a lot of stations were terrified by the FCC when the fairness doctrine was in. And the FCC, again, depending on the political people who told them what to do. That's why I quoted Fred Friendly, and you can look at the Nixon record. They came down hard.
Yeah, those were illegal. Those were illegal
actions. The main thing is, do you want government in control of what you hear and see?
They already are now.
And I'll use the word. There is something Stalinist about this. There is nothing Stalinist about breaking up the conglomerate ownership and hoping you get diversity. But I don't want somebody on the FCC taking orders from the White House and saying, WNYC, that's a far-left organization. Let's look at that license.
When the government grants 62 stations to the far-right Sinclair Broadcasting Group or 1,200 radio stations to Clear Channel, they already are making political decisions. And they and do you object, Nat, to their requiring stations to do news and public affairs? Or should they be able to just broadcast? I mean, if it's a First Amendment violation, why can't they just broadcast pornography all day?
No. It looks, it sounds
Can they tell
wonderful.
Them they can't broadcast pornography?
Are you going to let me answer the question?
Yeah.
It sounds wonderful. It's, everything should be in the public interest. It goes back to who defines the public interest, who's on the FCC, who's in the White House, who's the majority in Congress, Democrats or Republicans. You can't get away from the fact that this is a political decision depending on who's in power, and it is totally at variance with what the First Amendment is supposed to be.
We are almost out of time. We're debating the Fairness Doctrine with Steve Rendell from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff. I want to get in one comment from our comments page at WNYC.org, which kind of broadens it, and we're going to use this as our endpoint here. But a listener named Ken says, obviously, if imbalance is to be addressed, it is the overwhelming Democratic bias on almost every major media outlet from the New York Times to NPR and CNN. This is ridiculous. So, Steve, when this conversation is drawn in Congress as what to do about the pernicious influence of talk radio, what happens when there's a new fairness doctrine and there's conservative activism trying to get the government to inspect all the programs, all the debate programs on CNN and this show and everywhere else where there may be different points of view, but people are going to say, no, they're biased?
Well, I think it has to be done with a fairness doctrine where citizens approach a station and the FCC weighs in when there's disagreement. Look, the idea that there is a left-wing bias to our national media is not supported by any serious studies. FAIR and others have done several studies showing, in fact, for instance, in 2001, network nightly news shows out of something like 15,000 total sources. Of those who were politically partisan, 75% were Republicans, slightly less than 25% were Democrats. Every serious study will show that there is a corporate friendly bias, and therefore a greater preference for conservative and Republican opinion than for liberal or Democrat opinion.
But would it even apply? Would the fairness doctrine cause government to look at debate shows, let's say, where there are already opposing points of view, and say, no, this one, you know, Fox News Channel, Hannity and Combs, well, there are two points of view, but we know the whole thing is really skewed, so Hannity always wins. I mean, would that be a role of the government?
No, because that's cable, and cable is at least
but you want it applied to cable.
Theoretically, endlessly available. There's no scarcity. You can have thousands of stations on cable.
But don't you want it applied to cable?
No, I don't.
You
no,
don't.
Not at all. No, I think that should. I think that's wrong, and I think it misses the uniqueness of broadcast.
All right. 30 seconds. Is this dead now after this vote in Congress on Thursday in the House that basically said no fairness doctrine?
I think it is dead, and I think It's interesting that I think it's dead mainly because conservatives think, and this is what contradicts what the earlier caller said. Conservatives think that they've got the media system rigged. That's why they're against the Fairness Doctrine. Back in the 80s, Newt Gingrich, the NRA, and Accuracy in Media were all in favor of the Fairness Doctrine.
Nat Hentoff, the last word.
It's not dead. After the FCC and the Supreme Court said it was dead, then Congress came back, and by overwhelming votes, the Senate and the House brought it back, and we'd still have it if it hadn't been for a former broadcaster. He started in sports, then he did television on Death Valley days, and he was the president of the Screen Actors Guild for a while. And fortunately for free speech, he vetoed that bill. His name was, I hate to tell you, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, a great champion of free speech.
He did, in this case,
remember
Ed Meese? Free speech.
Remember Ed Meese?
He categorized
and said,
look
Meese
at what happened.
Okay, all right.
All right, that's our debate on the Fairness Doctrine. I hope it was fair. Steve Rendell from the group called Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting.
Lively anyway. Thanks, Brian.
Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
In a minute, we'll meet a teenage screenwriter and the Hollywood director who teamed up with her to make a movie. Stay with us.